if this combination's under common control.
Thank you, Hans. Good afternoon. Thank you. Good afternoon. In April and May, the board discussed a number of current value approaches that could be applied to business combinations under common control that affect NCI. We've noted that none of those approaches is ideal. They all involve cost and complexity and measurement uncertainty, and some of those approaches are not very good at capturing synergies. So what we would like to achieve at this meeting is to narrow down the number of approaches we will be exploring further, and we ask you for direction. I just would like to highlight that any direction we take today is not necessarily a final answer. It's just a question of what we're exploring further. To help you give us advice, we've prepared a number of illustrative examples which are designed to show which information will be provided under different current value approaches in different scenarios. And we also prepared illustrative examples to show what information would be provided by other measurement bases. And this is really just to remind you why we think that the current value approach is better for non-controlling shareholders. We're not going to walk you through all 60 slides in the presentation.
Disappointment.
So instead, Ashley will focus on the key slides, tee up our key points, and then I will try and summarize where we as staff stand today in light of the recent discussions with CMAQ and GPF. And just before I hand over to Ashley, a quick update on the feedback we received from CMAQ and GPF last week. So whereas views were mixed, as always, most members supported using a current value approach in scenarios where you have non-controlling shareholders. Some members also thought that a current value approach would be more useful for all types of users, including lenders and creditors, not just NCI. And some members also felt that predecessor values method should be used in all circumstances. But again, a majority supported a current value approach where NCI are involved. And one other important point that I wanted to make, some of the users suggested that it's better not to tinker with IFRS 3 because that would increase complexity. So their preference would be sort of in the current value family to go with the acquisition method as it stands today. So with that, I let Ashley talk you through the main slides.
Thank you, Yulia. Yes, so I will first walk you through our key observations in the slide deck and then open up the floor for any questions and comments and obviously your discussion. The starting point for us is going to be on slide 11. So I would like to discuss the information that will be provided about BCUCC transactions that affect NCI by the various measurement bases that we have. The purpose of the discussion is to illustrate why we still continue to think that a current value approach will provide the most relevant information about these transactions. And just to highlight, we're not going into detail of each approach that could be applied at this point, but rather we are trying to get kind of and illustrate a bigger picture here to see what's going on. As Yulia mentioned, we will be using illustrative scenarios to walk through our observations, and slide 12 explains that we will look at scenarios when equal values are exchanged, when a higher value is given up, and then when a higher value is received. For simplicity, we assume that the consideration paid is in cash. And one point I would like to emphasize is that, of course, the fair consideration is never a single amount. It is always a range. And the specific point within that range is a result of negotiations. However, for our illustration purposes, we assume that it is a single amount. Also, what is received in the transaction is the fair value of the acquired business and combination synergies. For the consideration transferred in the transaction, it may include a payment for some of these synergies. So let's start with a scenario where equal values are exchanged. These are illustrated on slides 14 through 16, but for the sake of time, I will not go through those, and you can look to slide 17 for the summary of that. And I'll kind of talk a little bit to that now. So if we apply a historical cost approach, an entity would allocate consideration to the acquired net assets. That would result in recognizing the acquired net assets at amounts that are higher than their fair value. And this could lead to recognizing an impairment loss in the future, even though those equal values were exchanged in the transaction. If we apply a current value approach, an entity would recognize the assets at their acquired fair values and would recognize goodwill as a residual. So since these values were at an equal exchange, the goodwill would comprise of goodwill that was previously generated in the acquired business and any combination synergies. So this would be kind of a meaningful number. If we apply a predecessor approach, an entity would recognize the distribution from equity, even though there was equal values exchanged in the transaction. So now we can look at what happens when a higher value is given up. And again, let's skip the detailed slides here and go to the summary on slide 21. So a historical cost approach and a predecessor approach would result in the same odd outcomes I just explained, but to a differing degree. A historical cost approach would again result in overstating the acquired net assets by even more. And a predecessor approach would recognize a distribution that does not reflect, though, the differences in those values exchanged. And a current value approach would aim to recognize the acquired net assets at fair value, the goodwill that includes the goodwill in the acquired business, and any combination synergies, and recognize a distribution as the difference between the values exchanged. So finally, let's look at a scenario where the higher value is received, and the summary is presented on slide 26. So depending on the consideration paid, a historical cost approach may not result in overstating the acquired net assets. However, the amounts at which the acquired net assets would be recognized would still be somewhat arbitrary and would depend on the allocation mechanism. Also, this historical cost approach would not reflect that a higher value was received. In a current value approach, similar to the previous scenarios, it would aim to recognize the acquired net assets at fair value, recognize goodwill that includes goodwill in the acquired business and any combination synergies, and a contribution as the difference between those values exchanged. Finally, in applying a predecessor approach, this could actually result in two different outcomes depending on how much was paid. So if the consideration is less than the carrying amounts of the net assets acquired, an entity would recognize a contribution, but it would not be reflective of actually those different values exchanged. If the consideration is greater than the carrying amounts of the acquired net assets, the predecessor approach would result in quite an odd outcome, actually. An entity would recognize a distribution even though a higher value was received. So to summarize on slide 27, having gone through these illustrative scenarios, the staff continue to think that the historical cost approach and a predecessor approach would not provide the most relevant information about these BCUCC transactions. If equal values are exchanged, a historical cost approach would overstate the acquired net assets and might lead to recognizing an impairment loss. And a predecessor approach would recognize a distribution from equity, even though equal values were exchanged. And if there were unequal values exchanged, both of these approaches would fail to reflect that. And that's really what I mean by this, is capturing that overpayment and underpayment in the transaction. In contrast, the current value approach would aim to reflect the acquired net assets at fair value, recognize goodwill, which includes the goodwill in the acquired business, and any combination synergies, and reflect any difference in the values exchanged as a contribution to or distribution from equity. And so this is why we continue to explore the current value approach. Now I would like to move on to slide 29. And as Yulia mentioned, at the May and April board meeting, the board discussed three different current value approaches, the full fair value approach, the revised ceiling approach, and the ceiling approach. The illustrations in the rest of the slide deck are designed to show you what information would be provided by these approaches in the same scenarios we just discussed. So if equal values were exchanged, when a higher value is given up, and when a higher value is received. In addition, we have also illustrated what information would be provided by the acquisition method as it is set out in IFRS 3. Again, I will not go through each and every slide, but instead guide you through the summary slides starting with slide 36.
Maybe, Ashley, Before you go on, can I just make an observation in respect of some of your comments around slide 27? And it's just that I think there's an implicit objective in BCUCC that we don't have in regular, you know, third-party business combinations, and we should just start articulating it, which is to recognize, you know, to identify and recognize any contribution or distribution that is that may be embedded in the transaction, and it's a consideration for BCUCC that we assume is not present in you know, in third party. And I think if we articulate that as an objective, it helps us focus on weighing the effectiveness at identifying and faithfully representing those.
I don't disagree, but I think it maybe would be better if we finish what we have to say before we jump into the debate. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I had noted that on that slide. That's why I just raised it there.
Oh, yes, thank you. So now starting with slide 36. If equal values are exchanged, the acquisition method and the revised ceiling approach would provide the same information. They would recognize the acquired net assets at fair value and recognize goodwill that includes goodwill in the acquired business and any combination synergies. In contrast, the full fair value approach and the ceiling approach would cap the recognized goodwill at the fair value of the acquired business and result in any recognized goodwill would not capture any synergies here. Instead, any component of the consideration attributable to those combination synergies would be recognized as a distribution. So moving on to the next scenario, and is illustrated on slide 42. If a higher value is given up, the acquisition method would initially capture any excess payment within the recognized goodwill that would subsequently be tested for impairment applying IAS 36. Under the revised ceiling approach, the idea here is that any such excess payment would be identified applying the mechanics that are in IAS 36 in the impairment test and recognize that portion as a distribution from equity instead of recognizing an impairment loss in the P&L. However, that outcome may not be achieved in practice because it would depend on how goodwill would be allocated to the CGUs in the existing headroom. In contrast, both the full fair value approach and the ceiling approach would recognize the distribution. However, this distribution could be overstated if the pricing of the transaction reflects any combination synergies. As in the previous scenario, any component of the consideration attributable to these synergies would be recognized as a distribution instead of being included in the recognized goodwill. Finally, moving on to the scenario where a higher value is received. Here we consider actually three different sub-scenarios because each of them provide a bit different information. So in case one, the consideration transferred is below the fair value of the acquired net assets.
Let's give us the slide we should be on as we go.
Yeah, yeah. So I will start with slides 48 after I just describe the cases really quick. Case two is where the consideration is above the fair value of the acquired net assets, but below the fair value of the acquired business. And finally, the case three that we'll discuss is the consideration is above the fair value of the acquired business, but below what a market participant would pay for both the aggregate of the acquired business and the combination synergies. So now on slide 48, which I'll discuss a little bit. If the consideration is below the fair value of the acquired net assets, an entity would recognize a gain under the acquisition method and a contribution under both the ceiling approach and the revised ceiling approach. This gain and the contributions here, in this case, would actually be recognized at the same amount, calculated as the difference between the consideration and the fair value of the acquired net assets. Under the full fair value approach, an entity would recognize and record a larger contribution calculated as the difference between the consideration and the fair value of the acquired business, and would also recognize goodwill, and that goodwill would include goodwill that was previously generated in the acquired business. So moving on to case two and slide 53. If the consideration is above the fair value of the acquired net assets but below the fair value of the acquired business, all the approaches except for the full fair value approach recognize goodwill as the difference between the consideration and the fair value of the acquired net assets. The full fair value approach would, like in the previous case, recognize goodwill that includes goodwill in the acquired business and a contribution calculated as the difference between the consideration and the fair value of the acquired business. So finally, in the last case, case three on slide 58, where the consideration is above the fair value of the acquired business but below the, what a market participant would pay for the acquired business in combination synergies. In this case, the acquisition method and the revised ceiling approach would recognize goodwill as the difference between the consideration and the fair value of the acquired net assets. So goodwill would include both the goodwill previously generated in the acquired business and any combination synergies. But in contrast, both the full fair value approach and the ceiling approach would only recognize goodwill in the acquired business and would recognize the distribution, even though a higher value is received. And this distribution would actually not, would include the portion of the contribution that's attributable to the combination synergies. And I think maybe we are getting some questions about this part.
I would like to summarize. Probably would like just to very quickly summarize where we are as staff, what all those illustrations mean for us, and then we would invite you your views. So slide 60 summarizes information provided by different current value approaches in different scenarios. As you can see on that slide, both the acquisition method and revised ceiling approach are very good at capturing combination synergies, but they are not very good at detecting overpayments. So under IFRS 3, any overpayment will be originally trapped within goodwill and would be subsequently, goodwill would be subsequently tested for impairment. Under the revised ceiling approach, the idea is that we will use the mechanics in IAS 36 to identify any such overpayment and recognize it as a distribution rather than a gain. But the question is how well that would actually be achieved in practice. Now, if you look at full fair value approach and the ceiling approach, so these two approaches are quite sensitive to capturing overpayments and perhaps way too sensitive, because what these approaches do, essentially any portion of the consideration that is attributable to combination synergies is recognized as a distribution instead of being included in goodwill. But at the same time, if one was to take a view that synergies do not arise under common control in the same manner as they arise between unrelated parties, and maybe it's not such a big problem. Now, in terms of way forward, what we're saying, especially given the feedback we received from CIMAC and GPF, is that ideally it is probably good to stay as close to IFRS 3 as possible, and this is both from the point of view of complexity and understandability. At the same time, ideally, and this is to the point that Mary made earlier, ideally we also need some mechanism to screen for overpayments and underpayments, and this is simply because arguably under common control you just can't rely on a price in the same way you rely on a price that is achieved in negotiations between unrelated parties. That said, you can also argue that existing standards already have a mechanism for screening for underpayments and overpayments, and you could argue that even between unrelated parties, you can have overpayments and underpayments. So in IFRS 3 and IAS 36, any gain on a bargain purchase will be recognized as a gain, and any overpayment eventually will be captured by impairment test in IAS 36. So I guess on balance, we as staff think that it's definitely worth exploring IFRS 3 further as a basis for providing the most useful information about such transactions and perhaps tweaking IFRS 3 a little bit, such as instead of recognizing a gain, you would recognize a contribution. So that could be one viable option. Now, looking at full fair value approach, on balance, we think that this approach should be dropped. It is quite far from IFRS 3. In particular scenarios, it would involve grossing up goodwill and contribution to equity, and that would be anchored to fair value of the acquired business as a single number, and it's never a single number, it's always a range. So it's too much measurement uncertainty, too much cost and complexity, too far from IFRS 3, so on balance we think we should not continue with that approach. So this leaves a ceiling approach and revised ceiling approach. They're both close to IFRS 3. So the revised ceiling approach is closer to IFRS 3 than the ceiling approach, but then again, it's not very sensitive to capturing overpayments. The ceiling approach is a little bit further away from IFRS 3, but it's quite sensitive to capturing overpayments. And I suppose one way to think about ceiling approach is that conceptually, we're doing the same thing under ceiling approach and revised ceiling approach, except under revised ceiling approach, goodwill is tested. Well, you screen for overpayment, you test goodwill by allocating it to all existing CGUs using the existing mechanics in IAS 36, whereas under ceiling approach, you test goodwill, you screen for overpayment at the level of the acquired business rather than allocating that goodwill across. So with that, we turn it to the board for discussion.
Mary?
There's a ton of information in here, and we just kind of rattled through things a bit fast. So I really want to check my recollection about the difference in the mechanics, particularly initially between acquisition method and full fair value. So you said acquisition method is basically IFRS 3.
Yeah.
Okay. Full fair value, the difference, if just checking, is that full fair value would say what is hypothetically the goodwill amount that IFRS 3 measures goodwill based on the transaction price. Everything else is measured, some except, but basically everything else is measured at fair value, but then goodwill is measured as a residual based on the actual consideration paid. While the full fair value approach says measure goodwill through valuation, right?
So
rather than as a residual. Is that the primary difference in the mechanics between the two? I'm not objecting to your assertion that here are the problems, let's throw it away. I just want to make sure I know which method it is.
Yes. So full fair value method is a bit further from IFRS 3, which compared to what you described, Mary. So under full fair value, we would always compare fair value of the consideration to the fair value of the acquired business. And then any difference between fair values exchanged is either a distribution or a contribution. And then in order to calculate goodwill, you would always compare a fair value of the acquired business with fair value of the identifiable net assets. And so by doing that, the result is that any recognized goodwill is always goodwill previously generated in the acquired business, so you never capture any of combination synergies.
Okay, so under full fair value, there's never a goodwill that is combination synergies.
Never, yes. And you can have a scenario where you are grossing up goodwill and a contribution. So under full fair value approach, if what you paid is above fair value of identifiable net assets, but below fair value of the acquired business, you would still recognize higher goodwill than what you paid for, and you would recognize a contribution. And this is all, again, by reference to fair value of the acquired business as a single number.
Nick?
Thank you. And thanks to staff for presenting a large number of possible alternatives and the consequences of those alternatives. But I'd like to step back and kind of take a 60,000-foot view, see if we can simplify this, because I think there is merit in simplification here. And for me, I'd question whether there really is so much of a difference between a conventional business combination and a business combination under common control. I do recognise that the latter aren't done at arm's length and there can be a transfer of value. But equally, investors spend a lot of time in conventional transactions working out in their own mind whether the company is overpaid or underpaid for that transaction. And in that respect, this is the same as the situation that we have here. So my preferred solution, and indeed in those conventional situations, was starting to explore possible disclosures to help investors make that assessment. So I'm a supporter of using current accounting. I think that's the right thing to do rather than historic accounting for this group of transactions. We're looking at where there's an NCI. I'd be inclined to, as much as possible, use IFRS 3 to do that and supplement it with additional disclosures, as we are already talking about, to help investors assess whether these are overpayments or underpayments in these transactions. And I think that brings a great deal of simplification for preparers, for investors. I really struggle with the thought of trying to fair value the acquired entity. That, you know, that's a whole new revenue source for the valuation industry, which I don't think we need, and we keep hearing pushback against that. So I really do question that key premise. I recognise there are some differences, but I'm not sure the differences are that great.
Can I just clarify one thing in your position?
Mm.
So in saying that you would like to stay as close to IFRS 3 as possible, which we agree with, the question then becomes, in IFRS 3, if you pay less than fair value of your acquired assets, it's a bargain purchase and it is a gain. Would you agree that under common control, it's not a bargain purchase, but it is a contribution to equity?
I'm not convinced you have to go that far yet. I'm not convinced you need to make that next step.
Darryl?
So I think I might be in the same place as Nick. The when Mary earlier mentioned the idea that what we're trying to capture here is the contributional distribution, I jumped in at that stage, and the reason was because of where you get to at the conclusion here. I think if we are trying to capture the contributional distribution, you get a very different answer to what IFRS 3 would produce under a number of circumstances. And so, for example, this idea that I might have a bargain purchase, and bearing in mind a bargain purchase is not just when I pay less than the fair value of the tangible assets, it's also when I pay less than the goodwill, than the fair value of the goodwill. So I might pay more than the tangible assets, but less than the value of the goodwill. Now, that seems to push me towards a fair value approach. But if what I'm trying to capture is the contribution and the distribution, I think what I'm pushed towards is this full fair value approach, and maybe a little bit more than the full fair value approach. I don't know that we should be setting a standard that is higher than what we set for normal purchases. And in normal purchases, and this is one of those things in IFRS 3 that we've made for very sensible reasons, we don't require you to measure the value of the goodwill you are purchasing and then measure the value of that goodwill against what you've contributed, what you've paid, and see whether you have both a positive goodwill and a negative goodwill. And it feels like that might be the direction we were going if we were going for some of the other approaches. So I think I'm comfortable with where you landed, but I don't think I like the idea that what we're trying to achieve is this distribution versus contribution argument.
Right. Daryl, and when you say that you're comfortable with where we land, what exactly do you mean? Like what?
That the focus should be the IFRS 3, I think, the acquisition method approach, mm-hmm. with the ceiling approach that helps us capture some transactions outside of that.
Thank you, Hans. I agree with Nick's point that maybe we should think about disclosure. Because why we think that BCUCC is different from, you know, normal business combination, because it's under common control. It's like a related party transaction. So I'm thinking about now, in the normal business, we do have related party disclosure standard there. Mm. We will not justify that related party transaction fair or overpay or less pay. We simply said you should disclose that. So I think first we should bear in mind that we should establish this model based on more disclosure to the users. Try not to justify the transaction, whether it's fair or not, whether it's overpay or not, whether, as Daryl said, there is distribution or contribution, because it will put accounting a situation. The transaction is there, but the way accounting try to justify this transaction is arm's length or not, whether, you know, it's fair or not fair. I think accounting cannot do further. So this is the first thing. I think we can, you know, learn something from related party disclosure standards and to look at the transaction itself. Secondly, what kind of accounting method we need. I think we will look at the four fair value approach, as Ilya said, that actually it cannot justify it because we simply, you know, accounting the goodwill as the acquired business itself. It's not actually, it's also not, cannot justify that synergy. It's the synergy? I'm not sure of that. And for seeding approach, revised seeding approach, in some cases, it's like an accounting exercise. Conceptually, we cannot justify why we kept, you know, goodwill or just some, yeah. So for seeding approach and revised seeding approach, quite complicated. And also, it still rely on the fair value of the acquired business.
Not the revised seeding approach.
Yeah, but it still rely on that. So I think it's quite complicated. So from my point of view, only two solutions. One is IFRS 3 acquisition method. One is we still keep the door open to the predecessor method plus disclosure. Because in some cases, those BCUCC, if we look at the substance of those BCUCC, some even NCI involved, but it's simply just, you know, group reorganization, group restructure, just pulling two businesses together. There is no substantial, no commercial substantial there, no cash flow changes and something like that. So in this case, from my point of view, I think predecessor method is still worth to explore for those transactions. If you try to fair value those business you acquired, actually the preparers will say that, and it's not the case because the business doesn't change it anymore. It looks like the same as before. So I'm not sure. I'm still not sure whether users also favor using current value to account for those transactions, because it looks like future cash flow changed, but actually nothing changed in substance. So in this case, we should explore maybe predecessor method plus disclosure. Maybe there are some cases, I think NCI deeply involved, try to make, you know, the price fair based on arm's length. Maybe we can explore, you know, current value approach, which based on IFRS 3, hopefully similar or same as IFRS 3, it lets the accounting treatment simple.
Doc? Thank you. I really appreciate the stuff the paper. It's beautiful, beautifully, you know, illustrated all the variety of situation. And analysis was quite good. It can be a base of, you know, for us to use in the future, because in the BCUCC there are a variety of scenarios. And on page 60, you showed a variety of scenarios: equal value exchange, higher value given up, and the lower value given up. Have you ever thought about the population of distribution of these three types of transaction? I mean, is there any consideration about the distribution of the transaction? I guess even in the BCUCC, most transaction may be equal value exchanged. And the higher value given up and the lower value given up is not really majority of the transaction. So have you ever thought about the population?
Well, I don't think it is feasible empirically to collect information about how globally these transactions are priced. I think Nick would probably argue that even in a regular business combination between unrelated parties, you would, you know, have underpayments and overpayments, and it's not infrequent. I think one could argue that if you can have an underpayment and overpayment, even, you know, negotiate a transaction under common control, like, first of all, you can have greater number of instances when the price deviates from what is fair, and second of all, those deviations could be greater as well, to the extent that the parent may decide to contribute one business to another business just as a contribution for free. But to answer your question, no, we don't have information about how globally.
Thank you. And coming back to what Jin-Chao was trying to say, I think there are a variety of type of BCUCC, and our presumption is to focus on company A, which has an NCI. So if company A doesn't have NCI, maybe it's just an internal transaction. But once company A has NCI, we have to provide information to NCI. But there are a variety of situation. NCI could be 49%, but could be only 1%. Maybe significance is different. And one other concern to me is I think ceiling approach is fine because of the reason you just said before. However, the challenge is by going to the ceiling approach, we may have more distribution compared to the acquisition method or revised ceiling approach. And we could say that reflect better articulation of the economics. However, distribution is normally regulated by the each jurisdiction regulators, and the amount which we come up with and the amount they use it for statutory reporting may be different. So there should be some conflict. And in many cases, company A would not be listed company. So if the company A is not listed, in some jurisdiction, adopting IFRS is prohibited or not required. So we have to consider such kind of variety of cases as well in the future.
Can I just clarify, just to be absolutely clear? So, of course, at some point in time in the future, we would need to think about, first of all, different kinds of NCI. Like, does it matter how substantial is NCI? Does it matter whether, let's say, these are public shareholders or whether it's employee stock options? So we will need to look at it. We're not looking at this today. Today we're looking at, well, if you have NCI, what information would be most useful to them? And secondly, of course, we need to look at other types of transactions where you don't have NCI. So again, it's coming in the future. It's not the focus of today's discussion. So, Doug, just to be clear, if we are talking about NCI transaction, are you saying that you would support this ceiling approach?
Basically. Okay. Support.
Thanks for the paper. I think you've done a great analysis of all the changes, all the different methods, and that's really, really useful for us. So I think that we're quite theoretical at this point. We know there's these other issues. You've started to allude to them. Other people have mentioned them. But I think this is a great way for us to start and put those other issues to the side and say, look at these and what this tells us before we start getting into the complications of no NCI or how much NCI and so forth. So based on what we've got here, I do support the idea that we continue forward with acquisition method and ceiling approach. I think I do support that. Looking ahead, I think ceiling approach has got problems that may mean we can't continue with it, but as you just said, Yulia, that's for another day. Based on what we've presented with today, I think it's very useful, and I agree with your proposal to carry forward with two.
Thank you. Yes, I prefer the ceiling approach because you are surveying their board members' views. I prefer their ceiling rather than the IFRS. So the gains and losses of this M&A transactions is issue among related party transactions. So that's why Mary is saying one of the objectives of this accounting is identify distribution or contribution rather than gains and losses. So that's why I prefer the ceiling approach. One other suggestion, have you ever thought about the kind of a separation of the payment by company A into two parts. One is NCI paid some amount, for example, 30% of the consideration. The other 70% payment is coming from the parents, actually their parents' portion. In this, if we see this 30-70% now payment, in the case of the payment of NCI is quite close to kind of a third-party transaction. However, the 70% of payment by their parent, maybe it's a more related party transaction. Have we ever discussed about that kind of separating?
I'm not sure I actually understand, because what we're talking about, we're looking at reporting entity. So reporting entity is the entity that purchased a business. It is the entity itself, not its shareholders, that is making a purchase. Therefore, to me, whatever is paid, the consideration is paid by that entity. It has nothing to do with any NCI.
I think, Jim, we might be talking about the treatment that used to exist as an option in IFRS and used to be required, I think, in US GAAP and Canadian GAAP, which was that you, let's say it's 30% NCI, you'd recognise the transaction 30% at fair value, 70% on a predecessor basis, a kind of relative interest. That was the kind of...
Yes, correct. Another thing is, let me go ahead there. As Mary, as I asked, the definition of fair value of the acquired business seems to me not consistent with the IFRS 13 definition. As Mary is wondering, this one is the same question I had. You know, when you analyze this issue, for example, you are saying the full fair value and the ceiling approaches not provide some, but in a sense, it sees the goodwill as a kind of an additional distribution, but that depends on what the fair value you are using. If you are using the definition of a fair value in IFRS 13, that's a kind of current exit value, so that might include the combining synergies in that fair value. But you are saying only internally generated goodwill must be included in the fair value of the acquired business. Please check with whether this definition of your fair value here is consistent with the general common sense defined one in IFRS 13. That's another suggestion. Finally, there's a small one later. I'll stop here. Sorry.
Gary?
Thank you. Julian, Ashley, I agree with your suggested path forward to drop full fair value and revise ceiling. I think you've demonstrated pretty conclusively to me anyways, they each have some limitations. It's big enough that we shouldn't pursue with them any further. With respect to the ceiling approach or acquisition approach, I don't have a strong view on either one in this moment, so I think they both need some more work. To my way of thinking, each have some limitations, which we'll explore. For example, the acquisition method, IFRS 3 was designed for a situation of unrelated parties, willing buyers, willing sellers, arm's length. That is most certainly not the situation here, when ultimately, despite it all, this is what P wants the result to be. So to the extent that you cannot assume arm's length treatment, I'm not sure how that will affect your analysis going forward or your outreach, but I think we need to do that. Plus, I've got some concerns about assuming the relative shades of colors on your charts on page 58 are roughly right. I mean, looking at the acquisition approach, you're generating greater goodwill on an internal transaction than you are under the ceiling approach. That doesn't strike me as a good end result. I think perhaps a distribution might be more appropriate in the circumstances, and your charts work well, you know, when you're at equal or higher value, but not always necessarily the case. There are some times when you're actually have more of a contribution as opposed to distribution. So not prepared to sign off on one or the other. I think they both got merit. They both got some limitations. I mean, you need more work. Well, the other thing is I wouldn't make this a focal point of outreach, but when I start thinking book tax conformity in the world, and particularly when you got separate tax returns, are we likely to run into situations where your distributions or contributions are viewed as taxable gains or losses when, in fact, they're hung up in the balance sheet, in which case then you get, if it's a taxable gain, well, that's a cash tax in this case, and so on. I don't know if that's common or if it exists, but distributions and contributions, in some cases, certainly could be viewed as taxable events. Again, I wouldn't make it a central point of the outreach, but I would just keep your eyes and ears alert to it. Mm-hmm.
So,
thank you also for the analysis. It took me a long time to get through it and digest it, but it was very helpful, I think, for thinking. I think we should think carefully about what Nick said, because it would be a much... Well, it helps with that, the comparability point that you said some users had raised at CMAQ, and also I think given the challenges we're already aware of in our other projects looking at goodwill and impairment and knowing how difficult it can be to identify things like overpayments, even in sort of arm's length transactions, and the challenges we've got with impairment, I think I have a bit of a concern with the approaches, the full fair value approach and the ceiling approach, which are going to introduce even more sort of granularity and measurement uncertainty in terms of starting to think about valuations of the fair value of the acquired business. I think that could be quite complex, add cost and measurement uncertainty into over and above what we're already challenged with in IFRS 3 just for standard transactions. So I certainly wouldn't, I don't think we should pursue further personally the full fair value approach and the ceiling approach because of that extra bit of measurement uncertainty and the extra step required of measuring the fair value of the acquired business. So, but I do think that giving some more consideration to the revised ceiling approach could be helpful because it builds very closely on what we've got on IFRS 3. And we do know that if you think about what goes on in the market already, we know that there is some sensitivity to the potential for something else going on in these types of transactions over and above normal business combinations. And so maybe what's nice about the revised ceiling approach is it really builds on the existing mechanics. We've got the comparability of, you know, basically the same thing going on with normal acquisition accounting, but then we've just got the sort of tweak, as I understand it, where rather than impairment initially, you might have a distribution, or if there's a gain under IFRS 3, you would think about it as a contribution. That sort of it helps us acknowledge the fact there is something different about these types of transactions, but without really straying too far in terms of cost and complexity and measurement uncertainty. So if I was going to go away from 3 at all, I should think about, I would only go so far, I think, as a revised ceiling approach.
Revised ceiling or ceiling approach?
Revised, because that, as I understand it, if I've done all my calculations correctly, basically it's the same mechanics. It's just that a gain would be a contribution and a potential day one impairment would be a distribution.
Revised ceiling essentially requires you to understand the synergies amount in addition to the actual transferred amount.
But, yeah, the revised, well, so is it based on IFRS 36 impairment test model.
Exactly.
But there is a danger. It's like we're using pink size, you know, to justify the value.
I think, as I understood it, based on my understanding, and maybe I missed something in the logic and the calculations, certainly possible, but I thought that it was very close, really, to the thinking you need to go through for sort of day one impairment, if you like, on an overpayment. That was sort of similar to a distribution from what I understood it. And if you had a gain on an underpayment under 3, it would be just relabeled as a contribution. So I saw it just as very similar mechanics, just with some relabeling, which in a way acknowledged the fact that we're in a different environment. So I saw it as quite a sort of subtle change, but not hunting for all contributions and distributions so hard as the other, the full fair value and the ceiling approach, but at least acknowledging we are in a different environment.
And maybe just to clarify so that it's not going in the confused direction, I think probably the best way to compare ceiling approach and revised ceiling approach, like if you look again at summary on slide 60, they're quite similar. The only difference essentially is that when we screen for any excess payment under the revised ceiling approach, we use the existing mechanics in IAS 36, which means we would allocate goodwill to all CGUs that are expected to benefit from their combination. So your outcome, whether you identify any sort of overpayment, for a lack of a better word, so your outcome will depend on how you allocate goodwill to CGUs, how much existing headroom you have, etc. So the difference between revised ceiling approach and ceiling approach is that essentially under ceiling approach, you test goodwill at the level of acquired business instead of allocating it to all CGUs. That's essentially the main difference. The logic is the same. The objective is the same. It's just measuring of any excess is different. So it's essentially a different impairment test.
But the other difference, too, is in your last example, the high value received version 3, you do need to have the fair value of the acquired business to work out a distribution amount, which you don't under the revised ceiling. Yeah. So that, I thought, was also a simplification, relatively speaking.
Agreed.
Tom?
A couple of things. One is, I think revised ceiling conceptually might work, but I think, and I made the argument last time, I won't repeat it, it's going to do very badly. We go through all the math and stuff with the problems. But that wasn't my main thing. I think a lot of this presumes that there's a reasonable chance that the consideration transferred will be different than the fair value of what's received. And I'd make one distinction different than Nick, by intent. Because in an arm's length, the presumption is that the acquirer is going to try and pay less. And whoever's being acquired is going to try and receive more, and they're going to fight it out, and if they're equal and can walk away, should come out about right. That's the assumption. The thing in the BCUCC issue is, might, because of this parent who wants this thing to go ahead, have a reason that the transfer by intent would be more or less. So that's a different world. And which is why I was really sympathetic, and I remain really sympathetic to the efforts of staff exploring what happens if this differs. And even on this, I'd say it's funny, somebody was saying that, you know, you have too much measurement error if you do this. If the consideration transferred is markedly different than what's received, you will merely transfer that measurement error into the goodwill, right? I mean, it's still there. It just moves to a different place. That, all that said, though, I think I agree that with Nick and everything I've heard is that simplicity is highly desirable unless we can figure a way to get this difference between consideration transferred and fair value measured with great precision across a whole series of transactions. I think we're going to impose a ton of cost. And I'll go back to, I think, that simplicity thing is probably where I would end up, and I think if we come to any votes, I'm going to be, the more I looked, and I've tried hard to do this measurement stuff, and I know the staff have, and I keep coming back that it's going to be hard. I do have a question. I'll just close with one question, because that's all I was going to do was ask a question to Jin Chow, because I think he came up with, I think, to me, a neat analogy. And I want to ask him a question about it, though. He sort of related it to related party transactions, which allows for the consideration transferred to be different, right, and related. That's one of the things we're worried about. And he says we deal with it through disclosure. So my one question to him is, and he mentioned the predecessor method and for sure doing it with disclosure. If there were cases where we did use current value, would we also do disclosures in your suggestion?
Yes. I think some cases, maybe predecessor method applied and plus disclosure, some cases, maybe cleanse value applied plus disclosure. Yeah.
And I just
I think disclosure still needed because the transaction quite specific and special, so we need disclosure. Yeah.
So I just like to, I think Jin Chao's suggestion acknowledges the basic question that these things exist. And that's another way of approaching it. So anyway, I thought that was a neat analogy.
Can I add one point? Yeah, I think Tom mentioned a very good thing that whether you know those BCUCT, we should look at the real transaction and what kind of decision making process happened. Let's imagine one company, there's NCI, whatever. 1% or 49%. But once there is a decision making in place, and those jurisdictions, there is a NCI, you know, non-controlling shareholders protection mechanism there, and those NCI will involving the decision making with regard to the BCUCC transaction, or even they have very significant influence for those transactions. So in this case, whether, as the example we give, the higher value give up will happen. Once the higher value give up, that means NCI will pay much more money to the controlling party. I don't think it will happen. Another case, if the business acquired, that business also has NCI. Whether those NCI would like to give more money to you, that means you got higher value received. Yeah, I think in reality, this will be very rare cases if NCI involving those decision-making process. Otherwise, we can say, okay, those NCI, they have no right to say anything about your transaction. Okay, it will happen. But in reality, we need to check whether it's really the real case, because we are based those presumptions, the value may be high value to give up, high value, you know, receive. Maybe this is not the real case. Yeah.
I have a very quick observation and a quick question. So to Chin Chao's point, I just would like to highlight that we would need to be doing more outreach at some point in the future. But from what we've heard so far, there are both cases in practice. So sometimes transactions under common control are transacted at fair value. In some other cases, they are not. Like, for example, one of the GPF members at the meeting last week said that when they have transactions under common control, controlling party just decides what the price is, full stop. So it's not necessarily fair. So, and I would like to emphasize that we are not trying to opine how often you have each scenario, but I think it's clear that you have all sorts of scenarios. You have transactions which are at fair value. Again, recognizing fair is not a single number, is a range, but you have something within that range and you have something outside that range. So that was my observation. And I also had a follow-up question to Tom. Tom, I did not actually note which approach you were supporting.
I wasn't supporting any direct. I think what I was saying at the end was I think almost anything we do in a measurement basis will be costly relative to the simplicity that's available in just sticking to doing IFRS 3, but I really was taken with, can we do something with disclosure? Because I think you're right. I think consideration transferred will depart on in a reasonably large number of cases. And you could keep the mechanics simple, and might it be easier to explore disclosure, which is why I came back with my question to Jin Chao, and I still like that analogy of that's how we... It is an alternative way, rather than just all, you know, through direct measurement to deal with this question of consideration transferred being different than the fair value range coming across. Because you're right, it's a range.
Right. So, and I think we will want a vote at some point in time, because I think we need clarity with that. But is it fair, then, Tom, to summarize that you are supporting a current value approach?
I would, again, and I think...
I would agree with you with major external stakeholders.
With
NCI,
yeah.
I'm sympathetic also, again, to, I think, Jim Chow's point that it may be that in some instances a predecessor, if there aren't significant external stakeholders, if I'm not misquoting you, would be worth reviewing.
Okay. And again, just to emphasize, at this meeting we are only talking about scenarios where you have NCIs. Yes. Yes, and we will come back to, because I think people might have different views, whether it needs to be substantive or not. So we will come back to it, but yes.
Martin.
First, I have to say, it's really good paper, because it demonstrates that all the kind of methods are not solving all the problems, so all methods have some issues, and having looked at all of that, I would also support this acquisition method, because I think that is then what people know. We don't have to create something new. And but with some exception, if it is a bargain purchase, clearly it should not be a gain. It's then kind of distribution. Okay. But on in the other hand side, if it is a kind of overpayment, I think we should then go to this disclosure exercise, because when we do kind of related party transactions in all others, we also don't have specific rules, right? When you kind of have a sale of a building or whatever can be related party or not at arm's length. And do we care about that? No, we don't. We do disclosure about related party, because then, okay, people say, oh, maybe it is not a fair price, and what happens? So I think that is maybe a good solution. If don't care about these contributions, if it's overpayment, but deal with it as disclosure. Say, okay, it's related parties, and maybe we have to make the, because it is big transaction, maybe a little bit more. Maybe then if you have any concern it is not at arm's length, maybe, okay, you have to disclose a fair value. But we can think about that. But I think we should deal with this in disclosure, as we do it in all other maybe things, because we don't have specific accounting rules for a related party financial instruments transactions or whatever kind of transactions. I don't, at least I'm not aware that we have in all kind of this, is it a contribution or distribution to equity? I mean, we can make all this up, and why do we have set here specific and not for all others? In addition to that, I have one only question, really a question. Man, you have in this paper this predecessor method, and it is always then the difference then between the contribution and the predecessor carrying values, you think is a kind of contribution or distribution. Is it in all the case of this kind of method? Isn't it that some people then also recognize a kind of goodwill and then amortize it over the life in this predecessor method?
As far as I'm aware, under the there are variations in how the predecessor method is applied, but as far as I'm aware, those variations relate to which predecessor carrying amounts you take. So do you take the amounts at the level of the transferred entity? Do you take amounts at the level of the transferor or next parent, or like some highest level in the group? There are also variations in terms of...
There's only regarded, my question is, what is the difference between the consideration and then the amount, carrying amount, which you reflect then on your balance sheet?
I'm not
is that always dealt with a kind of distribution or contribution?
As far as I'm aware, not any kind of equity, not to goodwill.
Okay. Adams.
Thanks, Hans. I think you've heard enough in terms of what you expect from this session. I just would like to remark the quality of the paper as well. It's very good. I would say excellent, actually. And I really like it, the way you structure it and bring in all the issues associated with each method. I'm actually very supportive of us not reinventing the wheel here. I would go straight to the IFRS 3 acquisition method. But I do understand the stage we are and the potential for a discussion paper, so we have more of a poetic freedom to explore alternatives. And this is not unusual for us to do so. Then, yeah, if you do believe as a staff is worth pursuing, also exploring up to a point where we can eventually decide thoroughly about another approach, like the Cilium approach that you suggest. I'm not against, but I think, in my view, I do echo Nick's comments in the very beginning. The level of complexity of creating or developing yet another method, and the costs associated with yet another method, and also the user's feedback that regardless of the acquisition, what they do need is more information about the price paid, the expectations around that, the returns, and why I paid that significant goodwill, and for how long I expect to have it integrated in my business in terms of synergies. So that said, I think you have a clear message so far.
François?
I started very much where the position that, in fact, she was developed. So I'm not going to repeat it. It was argued exactly in the same way.
Could you speak
a bit louder? My usual problem. So I'm going to say very loudly that I was in full agreement with the position expressed by Sue earlier, so I don't want to repeat it all. As it should be the case, I mean, the discussion that we've had makes the thinking go a bit beyond what I arrived with. I understand that we would want, and I understand that it was a sense of the recommendation by the staff that we would, in fact, put more importance on trying to track any possibility of overpayment. Even though I think it was a good objective, because that's the very reason I think why we would eventually depart from the acquisition method. That would be the only reason why we want to depart from it. I don't think that the ceiling method achieved that, because in your presentation yourself, you identified that the fair value of the acquired business would not necessarily be the anchor, I mean, the benchmark for a fair price that would be arrived at between willing parties. So I would not want a method that tracks overpayment in a way that is more severe than what is in fact happening in practice, what is a fair price in practice. And that's the reason why I described one of the reasons, in addition to the cost involved, the complexity, and the lack of comparability with normal combinations. So in fact, I support, as a result, I support very much, I don't have much to offer at that stage, but I'm very keen on looking into whether there were disclosures that could make up for for going beyond, in fact, tracking overpayment beyond what IFRS 3 does already. I would think, I think I would also wish to see discuss further whether we should accept having gains and losses on such transactions, or whether we should indeed qualify them as distribution or contribution to equity. So the fact that we say we continue to consider IFRS 3 eventually, primarily IFRS 3, to me does not necessarily mean that we make a decision as to how we qualify those potential gains and losses, maybe considering further whether they should be qualified as distribution or contribution would be worthwhile.
Daryl?
So I think a couple of things have come out during the conversation, and so some of this, as much as it might be a statement, has a question mark behind it, just in case I've misunderstood something. But so I started out by saying, and I still am in the camp, I think, where I support the acquisition method as a starting point, but I see a lot of value in continuing to explore the seeding approach. the background to that is, I think lots of people have said, it makes sense to have the acquisition approach, to have one approach that everybody understands across the board. But I think these transactions have two things that make them different. The first one, as lots of other people have touched on, is price discovery. So the price discovery is an artificial process, not a proper informed third-party process. And for me, the ceiling approach gives us a mechanism for correcting for that price change or that price discrepancy that might come into play. And then I think the second thing that happens in these transactions is that the synergies are available to the controlling party before the transaction has happened. And I think that makes these transactions different from a conventional transaction. The controlling party has it within their power to typically exercise and use those synergies. So they existed beforehand. And all that we're essentially now seeing is a movement of where those synergies exist from pure controlling party to the acquiring party now. To that. And that's why I prefer the ceiling approach, where the synergies are treated as a distribution, to the revised ceiling approach, where the synergies are treated as though they've just come into existence with this transaction. I think the other part of it for me is the point that I think Tom was raising, that the synergies themselves are difficult to determine. So it's also a hard number to actually work through, as opposed to looking at the cold value of the entity as it exists. And so I think that's what gets me to that position, but I think Sue wants to ask me something.
I will ask a question.
I want to ask a question.
So this point on the synergies, and because the way that I was looking at it sounds slightly different to the way that you were looking at it, which is that, sure, if you look at the ultimate controlling party, the synergies were always available because, by definition, they were under common control. But if I'm looking at the accounting for the, whatever we're calling this person, the receiving entity, that nice neutral term, the receiving entity, it didn't have the synergies available to it before because it didn't control the thing that it's just bought.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I think of it as being legitimate reflection of synergies by, because we're looking at the accounting for the receiving entity and its new subsidiary. The fact that the ultimate controller always had access to those synergies to me is irrelevant if we're looking at the accounting for the receiving entity.
I think in part it's about whether an NCI into an existing relationship gets something different to a pure outside shareholder outside of a controlling party.
I think I fundamentally disagree with that. If my sort of accounting perspective is... Oh, were you going to ask the same question, Martin?
Absolutely, yeah.
Martin and I are agreeing again.
I think what that might then be is the crux of the difference for us to think about between those two approaches. It's whether we think the synergies are actually transferring or whether we think the synergies were always there and were always available. That's the difference for me, but then between the revised ceiling approach and the ceiling approach in terms of the way I think about it.
But we are focusing on the NCIs, that is what my understanding is. And these synergies were not available to the NCI before. If it was only to the controlling party. And now as I realized with this entity which the NCI has a party in, and therefore I think it has to be reflected.
But actually, the synergy is based on the business or transaction-based. So it's receiving entity and acquired business, they are under common control. And maybe before the business combination happened, they already, the business, both sides already integrated each other. So they already enjoyed the synergy before, before you acquired that business. So it's happened. I think it's happened. And the second, I had a question about, Daryl, you say that the one of the difference is about the pricing discovery. I agree with that because we try to, to capture that part of the transaction. The solution, my view is that we can use the disclosure, to discover how entities, price the transaction. But you say you still try to price the acquired business that's caused a lot of measurement uncertainty.
So I think the hard part of applying anything other than the pure acquisition method is determining the value of the thing you are getting. So what the price discovery is. Whether I then have to disclose it or whether I have to report it is irrelevant to whether I have to first get it. And so it seems to me if I've gone through the process of determining what the fair value of the item would have been had this been a third-party transaction, then I might as well use it in the most effective way possible. And I think that's where I get to on that one.
Mary?
I've reacted kind of a bit differently to some of the same factors we've been discussing, and it comes back to me to saying I think it's important that we articulate what our objectives are, you know, for this project. And this comes back to my point about is our objective to identify and measure contribution distribution and to consult about that. And that really is a question because I think, as many others have said, it's very helpful to walk through all the mechanics, you know, the permutations, the mechanics. It makes me aware of their strengths and weaknesses and also highlights for me some of the costs, even though you haven't put cost information here. I think, you know, the explanation of the method shows where we have reliance on measurements that are subject to lesser or greater degrees of measurement uncertainty. So if I go back to slide 32 and think about the acquisition method, because I'm trying to respond and think about how I incorporate number of calls to keep it as simple as possible and not create all new systems. Maybe on what something Martin said earlier, if you look at the acquisition method set out in IFRS 3 and think about it in the context, think about it in the context of transactions under common control, it's, you know, if you, I think it, one question we have to think about is whether our concern about there being deliberately embedded, to Tom's point, contributions or distributions, whether we think it's low or, you know, medium kind of level of concern in terms of how much we should do to try and address it. If, when you look at slide 32, the consideration transferred, and this is just how IFRS 3 works, the consideration transferred is less than the blue box, the fair value, sorry, it's less than the bronze box, the fair value of identifiable net assets. It's only when you get below that point that you start recognizing a bargain purchase. And you know, Martin's point was that, yes, if we apply the IFRS 3 mechanics, it's a relatively simple fix of saying, instead of recognizing a gain in P&L, recognize a contribution, but don't mess with the measurement. Mm-hmm. And when we look at IFRS 3 as it is, you only start recognizing goodwill when you go over that threshold of identifiable net assets. Okay, so that's where goodwill accounting kicks in. And then when I think about what is, you know, what's the problem we're trying to solve, I think, depending upon how significant a problem it is, we could either say we don't want any recognition and measurement response, in which case I think we'd take Nick's approach to say, just tell them to apply IFRS 3, and let's think about whether there are any additional disclosures that are specific to it being a related party transaction to, you know, give people additional information. So that would be a no recognition and measurement, but disclosure-only approach. I think the second thing we could say is, I have, you know, maybe because I have somewhat heightened level of interest in this, I'm going to say I have maybe a requirement with qualitative guidelines to consider this in terms of highlighting that good, you know, there may be times when you have in effect so much goodwill that you have to consider whether or not there is a related party transaction, a capital distribution that in effect is being capitalized as an asset. Because if you overpay, that's what's happening in terms of the mechanics. If I pay significantly more than the fair value of the acquired business, the more and more there's a chance of an overpayment, what you're doing is capitalizing an overpayment that is a capital distribution from the entity and capitalizing it as if it were an asset. And that, to me, is a usefulness of financial statements and faithful representation concern, especially given what we've learned about how IS 36 might not be snap-to-it responsive in terms of identifying that that has happened. And so I have a little concern about saying, we don't care, we're just going to continue to capitalize it all as goodwill, when I have the heightened risk of it being a related party. Now, we could say you have to make a qualitative consideration of whether that's there, and if so, identify the amount and account for it, and not give, you know, just set out a very high-level principle, maybe think about some indicators, not tell people how to do it, but highlight the fact that it may be there. You know, that's qualitative. The third we could do is say recognition and, you know, and measurement. And again, I'm going to focus on overpayment. And we could say either you always have to do it, or we could say you only have to do it in certain circumstances when there are indicators of a particularly high risk. And so for me, when I look at all the mechanics and work through, I think before I spend a ton more time developing the mechanics further or having to walk people through a lot of pretty complex detailed calculations, I think I'd go back and say, okay, we've worked through it. There's nothing that's a simple answer from a mechanics perspective. So it leads us back to assessing how significant an issue is this and what are the different forms of responses, disclosure only, high-level requirement to consider it, maybe giving indicators and not giving instructions, apart from maybe an overall objective, which is to capture the amount of the payment in excess of the fair value, including synergies, and recognize that as a distribution. Or we could say, in some cases or in all cases, you have to measure the amount of the distribution. And then I think I would continue to go with, let's do it with the simplest way. If it's being deployed only occasionally, the simplest way might be the one with the least lesser measurement uncertainty. If it's being applied all the time, it might be the one that's closest to the known mechanics of IFRS 3, you know, in terms of thinking about what cost and benefit is. So I think it's valuable. I think it comes back to what are we trying to do? And I think I'd actually be really interested in getting input on how much should we care about it, because, yeah, I care a little about recognizing the capital contribution, especially in extreme cases, but I think we have the IFRS 3 mechanics that says this is when it's obvious enough that you recognize a discount purchase, and a simple tweak to the mechanics deals with that. So my focus is really all on capturing capital distributions, because I think that has the risk of distorting the financial statements of the acquiring entity by capitalizing as an asset something that is a distribution of economic resources of the entity. And I think we just have to think about how we screen for and identify the circumstances in which we account for it and decide whether overall it's such a low risk we'll go disclosure or qualitative or requirement to measure, you know, always or sometimes.
Tom? A couple of things arose. And it goes a little bit to why I'm in favor of simplicity. We're using the term overpayment a lot. First, one on synergies. I think there are some synergies that might only occur from the acquisition of the related tax. So you might have to put them together to get the gain of them being together. At least when I listen to people, and from what I've read, a major reason for doing this is sometimes tax, and I'll call that a synergy that wouldn't be available when they're apart. Second, just on the question of overpayment, a second major overpayment. Sorry, I'll come back. Well, often the term overpayment seems to be used in the case of a subsidiary with a non-controlling interest. And the question is the non-controlling interest being disadvantaged? The overpayment suggests that. You could have a payment that is certainly higher than the acquired value of the business without the non-controlling interest being disadvantaged, I think. And for example, another major reason for doing this is to put some like units together and then spin it off and generate a breakup premium. Okay, and you might share a chunk of the breakup premium with one of these entities, in which case it's not an overpayment in the sense of being unfair. It's an overpayment relative to the fair value of the acquired business, but it's not an unfair payment. So I'd make that distinction as well, which is kind of goes to this complication on where I'm back to the disclosure suggestion. And then the other one, same on the same issue about this question of an overpayment. Another thing that seems really common, and it's been made elsewhere, is where you have the parent. If you want to put two subsidiaries together, the parent can specify either A to take B or B to take A. So if we put in something that really made sure that when the one with the subsidiary with the non-controlling interest did the takeover, and we really strongly signaled overpayment, the parent could just flip around if they wanted to get exactly, if they were trying to take advantage of that non-controlling interest, they just make the other one the acquirer and pay less. And we won't catch that because we don't take care of underpayments. But you could expropriate wealth either way as long as I have the power to dictate who takes over whom. And apparently that's pretty common in these cases as well. So I think if we do anything, that's again part of the complication, is if we do something to control the information signal on one direction, there may well be a lot of structuring just to avoid that. And I don't think we can cover every scenario when we structure these. And I go back to my simplicity statement on that.
Gary? Very quickly. I still stand by my earlier comment. I think either acquisition method or sealing approach should be work further. I don't have a view. But there is, as I'm looking at the chart on page 6, where we have all the circles, is I would think we should support whichever way we do, it's got least less measurement uncertainty than the other approaches. I mean, as I look at these things, neither A nor B nor C have independent existence. Their strength is part of a larger group. And this model that you've got, I think, works better when A and B are standalone, fully operational companies. But the more and more you're part of a bigger organization, you're dependent on P and all sorts of other circles around these that aren't even on the chart. So the more and more you're not independent and dependent on a larger entity, your measurement uncertainty grows because you measure it. You measure it as if it's a standalone business, but in fact it's not. And so on. So I think the staff, we should err wherever we come out on, assuming we come to some sort of recognition measurement conclusion, that's got the normally has the least amount of measurement uncertainty because they're not independent and they benefit by the entire group. And the A and B themselves might not be fully operational companies either. Yet they, again, dependent on C, D, E, and F, that are around them where they buy and sell from. So when you're not independent and it's otherwise a related party transaction, I think you can come up with fair value. You can come up with a lot of fair values, but you don't have the independent negotiation. So I would worry a lot about measurement uncertainty where we go on this. And I think the right answer is that gives us the least measurement uncertainty, but still somehow captures, as much of the fair value that, is reasonably measurable.
Okay.
We really need to summarize it, and we need some clear direction here. So many useful comments. Thank you very much. I think some of the comments made sort of relate to almost next steps, so we'll come back to next steps. But I guess in terms of what we need from the board for now, so first of all, could we, and also to Mary's point, so the question I'm going to ask is about if we were to take a quantitative approach, what would we do? And, of course, we will explore qualitative and disclosure approaches as well. But we really need to sort of decide on these as well while it's all present in memory.
So under those categories, is Nick's approach a qualitative approach?
I think Nick is both, right?
Nick's approach is more, I think, just do IFRS
disclosure.
Three.
I think Nick is disclosure.
Only right. Disclosure, Nick, no.
IFRS 3 plus.
IFRS 3 right. Is quantitative and qualitative. He is the acquisition method plus disclosure.
But if I may try and just say, so can we see whether who agrees that we drop full fair value approach?
Sorry.
It's your proposal. It's your proposal.
Drop full fair value.
Yeah. Yes. No further staff work, meaning.
No further staff
work. Right. Okay, I think the next question I would like to ask, and going to Nick's point, who would like as an approach to just take IFRS 3 with no tweaks whatsoever? And what I mean by that is that you could argue that if under IFRS 3 mechanics you have a gain on a bargain purchase, because it's under common control, there is no information asymmetry. It is actually a contribution, not a gain. So this is what Martin was saying. So I guess I would like to understand whether who would support using IFRS 3 exactly as it is with no tweaks whatsoever.
Are you asking for first preferences or are you asking for things to keep it under consideration?
Keep under consideration.
We can vote for more than one.
Yeah.
Okay. No, but you were asking it like, do you agree?
With disclosure?
It can be with disclosure, but yes, still, if you have a gain, it goes in as a gain as opposed to as a contribution.
The point is, if we're voting for this, we can also vote for another one.
Yes.
But it will cover.
This is your.
It's free voting, guys.
All the transactions affected NCI or.
Okay, we only are talking about transactions. So pure IFRS 3.
Wait, can I? This is not a vote. This is a question. It is. You say Nick's point about IFRS 3. I suggest, you know, when you're saying continue to pursue this, that you say, and we'll look at whether or not we tweak it from Martin's point about if you have a gain, consider whether to account for it as a gain.
That's a different option. Okay, let me ask the question.
Okay, no, I wasn't sure if you were wrapping that in or not. That's why I was
just trying to restrain.
Yeah, so essentially I was saying whether there is agreement that IFRS 3 as it stands is a no-go. So I wanted to see if there was any appetite for that. But let me try and ask a question differently. So who would support using IFRS 3, which is actually in the paper, as a basis? And then we will ask you at a future meeting, is a gain or a contribution? What disclosures do you need? And do we apply a qualitative or a quantitative threshold to recognizing goodwill? And then any excess payment would go to a contribution. So use IFRS 3 as a starting point and then consider three or four or five, consider possible variations and vote on variations.
You can stop there.
Okay. Right, so that's good.
One has narrowed it down to six variations. I mean, we're getting somewhere.
And then I think the only other steer I would like to see. So when we explore whether or not we quantitatively cap goodwill, that would be one of the things we explore. If we were to do a quantitative threshold, there were two ways to do it. Either applying mechanics of IS 36, which is essentially a revised ceiling approach, or by looking at fair value of the acquired business, which is essentially ceiling approach.
So why don't you stop in the previous one?
Yeah, I think
you should stop in the previous one.
Because it's
we don't know yet whether some variant of ceiling and revised ceiling still exists.
We would like direction, essentially, if we do cap goodwill, then is it revised Celian route or Celian route? Because we need to narrow down.
I think it might be easier, Julia, if you ask which ones you should drop now for further consideration. That worked quite well with the full fair value.
The
revised
is
not a capping mechanism anyway, so...
I don't know that we can answer that one. Do we want? Are we going to vote for sealing or revised sealing? Because they've both got measurement error problems that are going to affect cost benefits, affect information for users, and they're subtly different. And that isn't something we've talked about it in general, but that wasn't part of what we're doing today.
And I think I may be influenced by how often.
I think we can try whether there is enough people to want to not further. Yeah. Investigate sealing, revise sealing. It may be the case that everybody still wants to sit on the fence, but maybe not.
Which one do you try?
Drop.
Right. So who would like to completely drop sealing approach?
Sealing is fair value.
Completely drop.
Of the acquired business. Yes.
Not consider further.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
One more.
Seven to drop ceiling. Who would like to drop completely revised ceiling approach at this time?
I don't think we should have done that.
We want to go home now.
Now we're going to come back on a very marginal vote and say that sealing, we go ahead and we have to deal with fair value of business, which is really difficult, and we don't go ahead on revised sealing, which has got
just
the IAS 36 problem. So I don't think we should have... Well, we've done it, but I don't think that that's enough of a step because the vote's too...
We should discuss it again.
It is a tentative vote. We wanted to get a sense. It looks like... There is more or less equal split in terms of what needs to be explored further. I think it's good that we at least dropped one approach.
All I was going to say on the ceilings and what you do, the two ceiling approaches, I'd almost say stop analyzing them any further and doing a lot more work. I think it's, we've just said didn't get overwhelming majority to drop further consideration. We haven't found any fundamental flaws. Say, in the next paper, in the next approach, don't continue to build them out in all their further functional glory. Just think about the strengths, the weaknesses that you've already demonstrated, and therefore whether you would recommend using them or not. Because you asked the question, can we drop them from consideration? I'd say... My take is we don't want to drop them, but don't continue to build them out as a wholly separate alternative model.
If I can add to that, most people are in favour of IFRS 3 with some tweaks, and the tweaks come out of what we see sealing or revised sealing. So it isn't that we need more exploration of sealing or revised sealing. We need IFRS 3 with tweaks. Versus straight
eye.
And that's what we voted.
And we need a discussion on measurement uncertainty, of course. That is what we need next time.
Yeah. That's right.
They're not competing models for IFRS 3. They're when you maybe invoke some of the thoughts.
That's why my suggestion to consider the first question.
So basically, I think the agreement is that we are exploring IFRS 3, potentially with some overlays. And we can see the different overlays, and then at the future meeting we decide whether and which overlays we prefer.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Is that unanimous then? Because we need to vote.
You can down the road unanimously.
Okay.
Can I say one thing? I still think that in some cases we need to explore the processor method.
That's for this was just NCR.
Okay.